you've downloaded the Buckeye Leafcast, featuring two guys who have absolutely no idea what they're trying to say.
If he has a good offense, he has a good... So,
all right, let me think here what I was going to say. I don't know what the hell you want to call him over the
what I say?
I was going to say something, and I don't know.
I don't know what it is you're saying, but I like it.
And now, here are your hosts for the Buckeye Leafcast, Andy Evans, and the intergalactic Buckeye fan himself, Mr. Chris Stefanik.
So indeed, though, sir, we got some football to talk about.
Yes, we do.
Are you ready to rock and roll?
I am. Let's do it.
Ready to rumble. Ladies and gentlemen, that's right. You've gone and done it again. Downloaded another edition of the Buckeye Leafcast, Florida Atlantic University post-game recap with my man. He's got the plan. He's going to break it down as he always does. You know I'm talking about the intergalactic Buckeye fan himself, Mr. Chris Stefanik. Mr. Stefanik.
Woo! Andy.
What do we...
How about that?
How are you feeling? How are you feeling after a 24-point, fairly decisive win against the Florida Atlantic Owls on Saturday?
Well, I watched the first quarter and was like, hey, the game's over. We're going to roll them. Went out and enjoyed the rest of my Saturday, and we like rolled them like 80-0, right? Well, you're laughing. Is that funny?
ye of too much faith, sir. Too much faith. So I'm completely torn. See, okay, all right. I said, and I cannot remember, I'll be honest with you, specifically the score that I put out there.
Oh, I've got it. I've got it. You picked 24-10.
That's what I thought. Okay.
24-10. And so I picked, so they had 8 minutes in, Ohio State had eclipsed your score. I picked 45-21. No, I'm sorry. That was the final score, was 45-21. I picked 52-17. So I had them winning by 35. You had them winning by 14. They won by 24, exactly right in the middle between our two scores.
I wasn't giving them enough credit, at least. How do I put this? I was not giving them enough credit, but then again, they pretty much did exactly what I thought they were going to do. It just didn't work out in the order that I thought it would. I mean...
Well, here's the thing, Andy. So, if you average our scores together, we nailed it exactly. So that's what it is. It's like you and me, we compliment each other. I'm a little more too much yin, you're a little too much yang, but when you put the yin and yang together, it's perfect balance.
Yin and yang, baby! We yin and yang, man. We yinned it. We yanged it all over the friggin' place, dude. And you know who got yanged right in their face the first 7 minutes, 8 minutes of the ball game? Florida Atlantic. I mean, Ohio State, Chris, just comes out and explodes all over Florida Atlantic's face. 28-0. 28-0, dude.
Right.
And then the wheels fell off. The wheels, and I don't know why, but the wheels just friggin' fell off. And the Ohio State, after they got a 28-0 lead, that was the Ohio State that I expected to see. I just did not expect to see him come out and absolutely smack Florida Atlantic in the mouth as fast as they did. But then after that, that was the Ohio State that I was expecting to see. And so they proved me right, but they proved me wrong. So once again, I guess kind of that yin-yang theory.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess there's a couple ways to look at this. So you could look at it and be like, hey, yeah, okay, Ohio State came out and started strong. We're up 28-0. But then they lost the last 42 minutes of the game, 21-17, you know?
They did.
I mean, that's one way to look at it. I mean, another would be...
That's how I look at it. I'm sorry. The yang in me looks at it exactly how you just put it.
Right, right. And I get it. I mean, now granted, that last touchdown by Florida Atlantic was their starters versus our backups. So in my mind, you know, you could take 7 of that off, but it still would mean, you know, the last 42 minutes of the game, they only won, 17-14. You know, they squeaked by a team that they were, you know, favored to win by 4 touchdowns. But then another way I look at it, you know, they're favored to win by 4 touchdowns, 28 points. They won by 24. That's actually not that far below what the spread was. Had the 45-21 been spread out over the course of 4 quarters rather than 28-0 and then, you know, 17-21 the remainder of the game, had it like just been evenly the 45 points, you know, 10, 12 points a quarter or whatever, I think Ohio State fans would be like, yeah, you know, they won by 24. That they were picked to win by 28. That's pretty much about what I expected. You know, sure, I'd have liked to have seen them come in and win, you know, 60-0. But, you know, this is a brand new coaching staff on the defense, brand new offensive line, first time ever starter at QB. Yes, a decent first start. Yeah, it's about what we expected. They pretty much, you know, got the spread. It's just the way that it happened, where they just came out. It then like just set them up for disappointment if they didn't continue it. So, I've been thinking about it, and basically it's like, you know, there's this saying that it's never as good as it seems, and it's never as bad as it seems. This first 8 minutes, it wasn't really as good. Like Ohio State was not that much better than Florida Atlantic. It's just like all the dominoes lined up against Florida Atlantic. You know, they were lining up wrong, busted coverages. Ohio State couldn't miss anything. That sort of thing. Great field position on every drive, but it really wasn't that great. You know, it just like things just happened, like a whole bunch of luck happened all at once. Meanwhile, you look at that last 42 minutes where they, you know, quote unquote, lost the 21-17. I don't think things were really that bad. I think a lot of it was, you know, these are kids or young men anyway, that you get up 28-0, you lose concentration. You don't have that fire anymore. You don't have the eye of the tiger. This is human nature. This happens to anyone. You see it in basketball all the time. I know, like, and this is professionals. You'll see, like, in the NBA, somebody will come out and get, like, a 20-point lead in the first quarter. You never see them finish with an 80-point lead. They never sustain that for 4 quarters. Never, never, never. It's like, the end of the game, they'll win by, like, 18. You'll be like, what the hell? They were up by 20 points 10 minutes into the game. How did they only win by 18? It's human nature. When to bring like the level of intensity that's required to shellack somebody like that 28-0, it's almost impossible to do it if you know you don't have to. If you know you're like, hey, you know what, the game's in the bag, we can cruise from here on out. It's just really hard to bring that intensity. So that's kind of what I think happened, is it's like Ohio State could have easily like done way better those last 42 minutes. And they knew they didn't have to. That like I never at one point in that game felt that Florida Atlantic was in the game. I never at one point was like, oh my God, we're in trouble here. Because I knew like the second it got anywhere close, Ohio State would have the eye of the tiger back, and they were just so much better than Florida Atlantic that, you know, they would stop them at that point. That's where I'm at after this game.
And I completely get that. And as I'm watching the game, and after it's 28-0, you know, we're all kind of sitting around looking at each other like, whoa, are you serious? Like, is this really happening? Holy shit. This game is going to be 80-0. This is straight insanity. And, you know, then they got held to a punt on their next drive. So, okay. Then another punt. Then that silly backwards pass that turned into a fumble. Then another punt. Then another fumble from JK. And you're like, timeout. What in the hell just happened? Okay. They came out and looked unbelievable. Now it's a completely different team. I mean, to start the game, the offensive line was just, I mean, Fields had all day, you know, he was back there checking his Twitter feed. You know, he's back there on Facebook, man. He's back there making himself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He had all day to throw the football. And after that, I think Florida Atlantic kind of woke up and they're like, whoa, okay. All right. Yeah, we're not going to get beat this bad. This is ridiculous. And they made adjustments. And I also think that part of it, Ohio State lost that eye of the tiger. And I also was kind of curious if maybe Ryan Day didn't lose a little bit of that eye of the tiger edge and maybe get a little more conservative with his play calling. Because he did come out earlier in the week and said, basically, we're going to run an offense that caters to our guys, you know, skill set to start the season. Basically saying we're going to keep things as simple as possible. We're not going to show a whole lot. And we're going to basically try and win the football game doing as little as possible, at least as far as play calling is concerned. So I wonder if maybe he didn't pull in the reins even more and really kept things simple. Florida Atlantic made proper adjustments. You put the two of them together, and all of a sudden, you know, the wheels fell off. However, even though, yes, Ohio State did get outscored with 6 minutes and 50 seconds remaining in the first quarter after that point, 21-17, they still did enough to obviously stave off Florida Atlantic. And I didn't feel that way either, that there was a point where Ohio State could be in trouble, like, uh-oh, here comes Florida Atlantic, they're coming back, because when they finally did score there late in the first half, Ohio State's defense buckled down, held them to a field goal. Then Florida Atlantic comes out, first drive to start the second half, they're moving down the field, defense buckles down, holds them to another field goal. And then, yes, that last touchdown there where they went for two and got it, it was a cheapo. Ohio State's second and third string guys. I think I might have even seen members of the alumni band in there playing as well. It was a gimme touchdown, okay? Yeah, okay, go ahead and give Florida Atlantic that one. But even still, to see Ohio State just kind of fold it up and just kind of do enough to win the game, even though, yes, final score indicated a 24-point win, 3.5 touchdown win. That's a good, solid win. I think it was a good start for Ryan Day for the most part. But if this is the Ohio State team that is who they are, there's going to be some games, I think, you know, into the season where they can't play like that, man. They just cannot play like that. It's going to get them into trouble. So let's hope that that's not the case, and let's just hope that this was just kind of like an explosion of just, you know, they were so excited, they're so amped up, they're so hyped. I mean, you know, it's like you got that, you know, you've had a crush on the, you know, girl for a long time. You finally get a date with her. You're so excited. You get home, and, you know, you're, and you boom. And then after that, it's like, oh, really? Is that all you got? Okay. And you kind of limp home the rest of the way, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, well, part of it is the expectation. So Woody Hayes, his winning percentage was 761 at Ohio State. 761.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so you say. Over 761 for a 12-game season is 9 wins. So that's 3 losses. That's 3 losses a year, not even counting Big Ten championship game, which, you know, you're not going to win every one of those. Playoffs, bowl games, you're not going to win every one of those. 3 losses before you get out of the regular season. And this is the greatest coach Ohio State's ever had, like unquestioned. So, well, I mean, I guess some might question Urban, but considering the number of national titles, the number of Big Ten titles, and the fact that Woody had a whole different type of Michigan team to contend with and what Urban had to deal with. You know, Urban never had a rival that was on his level. Woody had a rival that was on his level to deal with. And agreed. He's losing. And Woody, with his percentage, is losing 3 games a year. I mean, Ryan Day, if he loses 15 regular season games in those 5 years, I mean, he's going to get rode out of town on a rail. People are going to be like, this guy's terrible. So the expectations right now are kind of ridiculous. They're kind of ridiculous. I mean, a lot of people were disappointed last year when Ohio State goes 13-1 as Big Ten champions and wins the Rose Bowl. It's kind of ridiculous. If you're really disappointed with that, and I mean, I get it, because it's like there's a what could have been, but you know, the Florida Atlantic has players too. This team, there are some analysts. I mean, Phil Steele, I think, is one of the best guys out there at predicting college football. I think he's got Florida Atlantic winning Conference USA. If Florida Atlantic wins Conference USA, beating them by 24 points rather, was a pretty good win. You know, that's middle. The winner of Conference USA is good enough to probably finish in the middle of the Big Ten. you know, at a minimum, not the bottom, you know, a middle, like,
I agree with that.
You know, out of 14 teams, maybe they finish 9 or something like
I'd
that.
Even so give them maybe 7 or 8, like real right there in the middle.
Right. You know? Yeah. I mean, well, a lot remains to be seen on how this turns out. But, you know, in the meanwhile, you know, you're saying the wheels fell off. Florida Atlantic had negative 14 yards at halftime. Florida Atlantic, their touchdown came because J.K. fumbled, right, in Ohio State territory. They didn't even – when they got that – I'm sorry, that field goal, rather, to the first scoring of the game. When they got that first field goal, they didn't even get a first down. J.K. fumbles, the defense stops them, they kick a field goal. You know, they come out – second. It wasn't until, like, what, like the fourth quarter that they finally got a touchdown. The defense looks really stout. And, oh, by the way, Florida Atlantic had a top 20 offense last year. You know, their defense was pretty poor. But their offense was like a top 20 offense in the nation. And you know, Lane Kiffin's an offensive genius, and he's got athletes all over the field out there. And this was a defense that was like historically awful for Ohio State, like in some measures, the worst defense Ohio State's ever had. You know, if you remember last year, terrible team they played, Oregon State, to start the year. Now, granted, they scored 70-some points on one side, but the other side, they gave up 30-some. They gave up like how many like plays of 30-some yards – you know, in that game, I think they had one. It wasn't until like the fourth quarter that they finally gave up like a 30-yard play. Florida Atlantic had one explosive play. So, I mean, the defense looks night and day. It looks like we're back to the silver bullets. Now, again, we might find out at the end of the season that Florida Atlantic's a 3-9 team, and this didn't mean anything. But I don't know. You know, we'll see as things pan out. It's just really early to be drawing any kind of conclusions off of this. And especially like – really strong conclusions, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, it's one thing to be like, you know, there's some things that look good and some things that look bad. That's one thing. You know, that's pretty obvious. But to be like, well, you know, Ohio State's in trouble going forward. It's like, well, no, it's kind of week one, dude. You know, remember how we felt after they lost to Virginia Tech in 2014? I think this team looks – now, granted, this is not Virginia Tech they're playing. But then again, Virginia Tech was a middle-of-the-road ACC team. If Florida Atlantic – ends up being Conference USA winner, that's probably pretty comparable to a middle-of-the-road ACC team. And you remember how that game went. We were not feeling – if you think you're feeling a little upset right now, you're in misery right now, just remember how you felt after that Virginia Tech game, and then remember how that all turned out. So now I'm not saying that the same thing's going to happen this year, but it could. They have the talent on this team to finish very strong, that's for sure.
Well, I'm certainly not concerned about the defense. As I stated before, the defense is going to be the backbone and the saving grace of this football team. I thought the defense played well. To your point, 4 sacks, 12 tackles for loss. The defensive line is just stout. And hell, they didn't even play, like, what, 3 guys? I know that Tyler Friday, Tyreek Smith did not play.
Jonathan Cooper,
for Pete's sakes, didn't play. And there was somebody else, too, that I'm forgetting off the top of my head who was on the defensive line that didn't play. And they still looked lights out. I mean, this defensive line, Chase Young, just going to be a beast. I mean, the defense I've got absolutely no qualms about.
I have a huge qualm with this defense.
Oh my God! I want to hear that.
I didn't see one point in the game where they had the linebackers up at the line of scrimmage. I mean, what is this shit? Dropping the linebackers back so they can actually watch the play unfold before them and not get caught up in the offensive lineman blocks the second the ball is snapped. I mean, this is some crap. I want to see my linebackers up there like linemen, getting their asses blocked the second the ball is snapped. This is bullshit.
Okay. So to your point, your qualm. The linebackers just are not that great. Malik Harrison, really, truly, is – and even Baron Browning had a decent game. I mean, those two really are what we've got. You know, I kept hearing all spring and throughout summer ball, Taraja Mitchell. He didn't play until the very end of the game. You know, I didn't see him in there until, I mean, it was like the fourth quarter when they finally put the second and third, or, you know, the second team in. But I kept hearing all this stuff about Taraja Mitchell, and he barely played. You know, and instead they're trying to rely on, you know, Pete Werner and Tuff Borland. And I mean, Tuff Borland, 3 tackles, 2 solo. That was it. You know, Werner, decent game, 4 tackles, 3 solo. He did have 1 tackle for loss. But Harrison, 5 tackles, 3 solo, 1 sack. He had 2 tackles for loss. Baron Browning, 4 tackles, 2 solo, 1 for loss. I guess he and Werner had about the same kind of game, quite frankly. But even still, I'm not sold on Pete Werner. I'm not sold on Tuff Borland. They're just not fast enough. I think Pete Werner's too small. I think and Tuff Borland, maybe he's still hampered a little bit by this Achilles injury. But otherwise, you know, our linebackers, I think that's the one weakness of the defense. The defensive backs are solid, although I have a gripe with what the hell's with this bullet position, Chris? We kept hearing about this fucking bullet position all spring, all summer. Bullet, 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 bullet. And Brendan White is supposed to be this bullet guy. He didn't play. He was barely out there. I saw him in the very beginning of the game and the very beginning of the second half. Other than that, Sean Wade was the one out there playing this third defensive back, this supposed bullet position or something, if this even bullet position even exists. So my gripe is, you know, we saw what Brendan White did last year, and now all of a sudden we're going to keep him off the field? Like, what in the hell is going on? I don't get that at all. I mean, I don't.
Andy,
know.
You sound like you sound like you want to see the 11 best guys in the field. I don't. Why would you put your 11 best players out there? That's crazy.
I know. I'm stupid.
You want to put your best defensive player in a position that only plays situationally and gets about 5 snaps a game? That's the secret recipe to winning, right? I mean, Michael Jordan, he didn't play like 40 minutes a game. Phil Jackson only put him out there for about, what, 5-8 minutes a game, right? Why would you use Michael Jordan a lot when you've got, like, the ace like that? You don't want to put your best players on the field. Obviously, I'm joking.
I know. This
was a big deal. I was joking about the linebackers, too, by the way. Like, last year, they played them up. Frickin' Shiano played them up at the line of scrimmage constantly. And, like, they couldn't watch the play develop before them, and they were terrible. This game, they backed them off. And while I agree with you that Borland and Werner don't look like All-Americans to me, they held Florida Atlantic to 0.7 yards per carry and 1 touchdown versus the starters. So I thought the defense played much better, but this is a legitimate beef here with
defense.
This whole bullet thing. So in case people like didn't kind of catch what the big difference was with this bullet, right? Previously, you know, as far as I can ever remember, since I was a little kid watching Ohio State, you'd have 2 cornerbacks, you'd have a free safety, and you'd have a strong safety. And now maybe you would go nickel or dime where you would take a linebacker out and bring in some extra defensive backs. But you have 2 safeties, 2 cornerbacks. That's your defensive, that's your base set, right? So now you still have 4 defensive backs with this new defense they're trotting out there, but it's 1 safety. Jordan Fuller, they're calling him like, I think a deep safety is what they're calling him. And then 3 cornerbacks. But situationally, they'll swap out 1 of the cornerbacks, in this case, the nickelback, Sean Wade, for a strong safety, which they're calling the bullet. So what this means, though, is now White is splitting time with Sean Wade. And, like, Sean Wade was out there most of the time. So it was like, it wasn't even 50-50. It was like,
yeah, no, Wade got snaps.
Yeah, so where in the past, what would happen is Sean Wade would be out there, or I'm sorry, White, last year, White would be out there the whole time because you would always have 2 safeties and 2 cornerbacks. And then Wade would basically be, as a nickelback, would be splitting time with a linebacker, with Pete Werner. So Wade would come in passing situations, Werner would go out. Now, Werner's out there the entire game, and Wade is splitting time with White, who's like, he's a guy, like, if you're going to have somebody out there the whole game, he's one of the guys you should probably have out there the whole game, right? And so, I'm not feeling this at all. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You want your best 11 players out there, and it's just, I don't get it. I don't see why now, basically, the difference from last year to this year is you're getting a whole lot more Pete Werner and a whole lot less Brendan White. And how could that possibly be a good thing?
Well, so, throughout the spring, they were toying around with that. You know, they moved Brendan White to the linebacker position. And then they said, well, we've kind of created this whole new bullet defense. And so that's what I thought was like, oh, wow. You know, they're going to play like a 4-2-5 kind of thing where, you know, two linebackers, five defensive backs. You still got your four defensive linemen, and maybe they're going to be yanking Borland or Werner out in lieu of Brendan White. You know, Brendan White's not a small guy. I mean, he's, you know, what, 6'2", 220? I mean, he's built like a – yeah, I mean, he's kind of built – I mean, he's more built, I'd say, than Pete Werner. Pete Werner just looks small, even though I think Pete Werner's listed at like 6'2", 220. He just looks small to me. I don't know what it is. Maybe – and you know what? Pete Werner's actually a great kid. I remember, you know, when – Columbus Wired was covering the football team and going to some interview sessions and interviewing him. He's a great kid, smart guy. You know, I'm sure he represents the university well outside of the off the field and in the classroom, outside of the classroom, all that kind of stuff. But as far as just football talent's concerned, I mean, he is who he is. He's a three-star linebacker from Indianapolis, you know, and Brendan White is a four-star athlete from New Albany, Ohio. You know, who do you want? I want a four-star kid who's got speed, some good size, and has a nose for the ball and has a pedigree, you know? Brendan White has a friggin' pedigree. I mean, his old man was not too bad at playing the game of football when he was both here at Ohio State and in the NFL with the Detroit Lions for several years, his dad, of course, being William White. But I you know, I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe this is, once again, this was just kind of pulling the reins in. They didn't want Luke Fickell, Cincinnati, or anybody else that's going to get tape of this game. Anything to try and glean and prepare for in the upcoming games, you know, for the rest of the season. I don't know. But just give me more Brendan White. That's all I need to know.
White was asked in the offseason, tell me about this bullet, or I should say camp, not necessarily offseason, but during camp, tell me a little bit about this bullet position. And he said, it's, you know, two parts linebacker, one part safety. He said, it's more of a linebacker position. And he said, it's one they're going to rotate with the Sam, the strong side linebacker, that with Pete Werner. He said, it's going to be whenever they, and it's going to be situational dependent. If it's a running situation and you've got a running tight end on the field, a blocking tight end on the field, then they're going to have Pete Werner out there. If it's a passing situation and you've got a receiving threat, a tight end out there, then he's like, I'm going to be out there. The bullet's going to be on the field. But that wasn't what it, how it was at all yesterday. So I'm like, either he was lying or the game plan changed for Florida Atlantic. I'm anxious to see how this goes going forward, because that was not what happened at all. Pete Werner was out there the entire game. And it was, he was subbing back and forth with Wade. So we'll see, but you know, we would be doing Buckeye Leafcast Nation a disservice if we didn't talk at least a little bit about Justin Fields and one J.K. Dobbins.
Just getting ready to say, dude, we've been hammering on the defense this whole time. People want to hear about the offense, because that, sir, is exactly that. That's what all eyes were on going into this game. Everybody pretty much knew that the defense was going to be fine, but obviously all those question marks on offense, especially the play of number one, the man who, Chris, went under center more than one time in the football game. He probably went under center more times in one game than any other quarterback in the history of the Urban Meyer era went under center combined. Justin Fields, the offense. I know people want to hear about it. Chris, what do you think? I mean, were you impressed with the play of the true sophomore number one? Do you got some questions? Are you feeling okay? What about the running game and a one number two, J.K. Dobbins? I want to hear your thoughts, sir. I've got mine, but I want to hear yours first.
Right. Well, you know, you talked about how that was more times under the center than during the whole Urban Meyer era.
Oh,
what,
my God.
What was the last game that an Ohio State tight end caught two touchdowns? Unless you know it. It was just meant to be rhetorical. We don't have to sit here and, like, rack our brains. So, yeah, there was new looks. It makes me wonder how much of last year was Ryan Day's offense and how much of it was Urban Meyer's offense.
Urban Meyer's,
you know, we saw a lot of two tight end sets. Now, we did see a lot of two tight ends in the past, too, but and even some three tight end sets. Like, it was pretty much about a third of the time they had multiple tight ends out there, you know, doing the snap.
It was all out of the shotgun.
Right. So they would do, like, and what they would do, this was interesting. So, you know, we didn't really see Jalen Gill. Last year, you saw rotating at the H was KJ Hill and Paris Campbell. And there was always an H on the field. This year, you know, through one game. They did not bring in Jalen Gill until it was, you know, it was mop up duty. When KJ Hill would rotate off the field, that's when they would bring in a second tight end. And I kind of liked it, you know. I mean, now granted, I'm not taking anything away from what Paris Campbell did last year too. I liked, you know, little jet sweeps that would go for 60 yards. Those are kind of nice too. But these two tight end things, man, that's a nice little wrinkle. Another something like teams really got to watch out for. And they were doing a lot of stuff where like one would be a decoy for the other. Like Ruckert got in the end zone twice. And I think on both of them, you know, Luke Farrell was like a decoy, and they would do like a little crossing pattern, and it would confuse the defense, and Fields would just wait. Okay, which one of you is going to come open? Which one are you going to cover? And which one are you going to let run free? And I'm like, man, if it's going to work like that, you know, more please. Sure. Let's see some more of that. And, yeah, I don't know. It was nice. I like these new wrinkles. I think this new offense, what Day's putting out there is good. You know, they have a lot of areas for improvement. Like Fields is no JT Barrett when it comes to doing the read option. It seemed like he was missing those reads a lot of times.
He was handing off a lot.
Yeah, and maybe a lot of that was called.
Except for a 51-yard touchdown scamper on the fourth play of the game.
Yeah, no, that was one.
A nice keeper.
He pulled it. The whole defense went with JK, and like Josh Myers delivered like a crushing blow to just totally open up that side of the field, and it was off to the races. But yeah, you know, that was my impression.
So Justin Fields in his OSU debut, first time ever starting in a football game. At least a college football game. 18 to 25 through the air, Chris. Pretty good completion percentage. 234 yards. That's not bad. And 4 passing touchdowns. No interceptions. Also chipped in 61 yards on 12 carries and that 51-yard touchdown run. JK, 91 yards, 21 carries, and a touchdown as well. Master Teague had 8 for 49. Including a 21-yard run, 6.1-yard average. Marcus Crowley with some cheap end of the game mop-up duty, 4 carries, 27 yards. In all, 48 carries by Ohio State for 237 yards. Through the air, 232 passing yards. Yeah, that's right. Justin Fields had 234 passing yards, but they ended as a team with 232 because the one pass that Chris Chuganov completed to Jalen Gill was for -2 yards. So all in all, though, a nice even spread. I'm with you. I like the new look of going under center. Was this something just to throw Florida Atlantic off? And we're going to see the good old shotgun formation the rest of the way. But I like it. Now, they were a little predictable in their under center. They were either, you know, stretching it to the outside or going inside. You didn't see, you know, too many counters or even maybe try and do a little option under center. But nonetheless, let's not forget the last 7 years, we've seen nothing but shotgun formation out of these kids. So probably asking them to just immediately go up under center and start doing all these crazy kinds of plays that they're not used to running might be asking a little bit much. So maybe get them acclimated into playing under center a little bit more. But I liked it. I liked it. I like the incorporation of, you know, going under center every now and again, you know, staying in the shotgun for the most part for your true formations on the offense. But then, yeah, you know, let's jazz it up, man. Let's get weird a little bit. You know, let's pull down our pants and get weird sometimes, dude. Sometimes you just got to get weird in life. And I like the fact that they were pulling down their pants a little bit and getting weird. You know, I liked it. I liked the diversity. I liked the fact that they mixed it up. And all in all, though, once again, going back to what we began the podcast talking about, I was immediately overly super impressed by the offense. And I'm sitting here thinking, wow, dude, just go ahead, pile it on the plate, give me a big old fat plate of crow, because I am just going to start chowing down right now. I could not have been any more incorrect on my assertion of how this offense was going to come out and play. And then after that, I mean, seriously, the wheels fell off. Now, they regrouped a little bit, and they still scored a couple of touchdowns in the second half. However, Chris, those two touchdowns that they scored in the second half were from midfield or closer. They did not have a long sustained touchdown drive after those first 28 points. Now, at the very end of the near.
Well,
the
those were pretty short. A lot of those were short too, because Florida Atlantic never got a first down. During those first 28 points, it was like, you know, three and out, three and out, three and out. And you remember, like, DeMario had like a 35-yard punt return, and you know, it was those were not long fields, generally speaking. Maybe the first one was, because they took the kickoff and returned it to, like, well, actually their opening kickoff, I think they got a 35-yard, 30-some-yard return on the kickoff too.
Yeah. Okay. So to your point, the very first touchdown drive, it was a 4-play, 70-yard drive. So they started at the 30.
It was not a long sustained drive. For sure. None of them were long and sustained. That's for sure.
Well, no, and maybe I should backtrack on the whole long sustained thing, because, yeah, the next two touchdown drives, the 25-yard pass to Ruckert was a 2-play, 26-yard drive that lasted 36 seconds. The 32-yard pass from Fields to Victor, a 3-play, 58-yard drive that lasted 37 seconds. And then the 29-yard touchdown pass from Fields to Olave, 4 plays, 46 yards, a minute two. So I guess really, if you look at it, aside from their first drive, and even the Ben Victor drive, I mean, they started on what, their own 42-yard line? Well, and then their third touchdown, or I'm sorry, fifth touchdown of the game, the second one to Ruckert, which was that 3-yard pass on the play fake, 10-play, 52-yard drive. So, yeah, I guess, in fact, all of their scoring drives just about started either at midfield or even in Florida Atlantic territory. That's interesting. Right.
So, I mean, that says a lot of things. One, it's a credit to the defense, and it's also a credit to special teams. You know, we haven't really had much kick returning at Ohio State since, God, pretty much since, like, I want to say back to the Ted Ginn days, but I guess we did have, we had one guy who had a punt return versus Minnesota. He was pretty good. Can't remember his name right now. Jalen Marshall. That's it. So yeah, he was a pretty good returner, but I mean, honestly, like for the number of athletes Ohio State gets, you'd think like they'd have explosive guys back there all the time, but they've really had issues with it. A lot of it's just ball security where they're just going with KJ Hill because he's got the best hands in the team, but he's a guy who's going to run like a 4.6, 4.7 in the combine in, you know, this spring. But at any rate, I would say the offense, my thing that made me pleased with it, one, the offensive line, you know, it's the kind of thing like they've only been together weeks, you know, and it's a unit. They have to play cohesively. You know, it's not like individuals. Everybody says that there's a lot of gelling that goes on. I think they are much further along than what the offensive line was in 2014, the same period. And look how good that offensive line was. I think this offensive line has that kind of potential in them, and they look good. I will say Fields, this is his first ever start in college. A guy who just played situationally, came in and did, you know, they didn't ask him to do a whole lot at Georgia. They had a couple packages that he specialized in. You know, this is the first time he's really been handed the keys to have to command the entire offense. And even in high school, he was only the starter for 2 years in his high school. So this is a kid who does not have a lot of football playing experience, does not have a lot of experience at quarterback. I thought the arm strength looked really good. I thought the accuracy was pretty good. You know, he had a couple that he missed, but a lot of them were right there. And he completed 70-some%, and that was with a few drops. You know, a couple of them, he hit the guys right in the hands and they dropped it. And the decision-making, I thought, overall was pretty good. Like, he didn't really put the ball in harm's way. If he was under pressure and it wasn't there, he'd just take off running, which is what I want to see from him. You know, so I thought the decision-making was pretty good for a guy making his first start in college. And he seemed calm. Like, I never, at one point, did he seem like he got rattled, even when he was getting hit, even when things were breaking down. Just calm, collected out there. You know, I see a lot of promise there. This guy could be really good, especially, you know, we got to realize, like, again, this is his first year starting. Quarterbacks usually take some experience to get good. It might not be till next year till we see this guy performing at the level that, you know, we all want him to perform at. And that's okay. I mean, that's reasonable. It's reasonable to say, you know, your second year, that's when you're going to take a challenge at, you know, being all conference or more, you know, to ask him of that coming in when he just got here in the spring and is still learning the playbook is asking a lot. And with that in mind, I feel like he's further along than what I hoped he would be. You know, I really didn't think he would come in and light the world on fire. I thought there'd be a lot of growing pains and we would lean on the offensive line and the running backs and, you know, giving him some easy plays to the wide receivers and the like, and that Ohio State would still win a lot of games based off the strength of their running game and the strength of the defense. I actually think the passing game is going to be pretty good. I liked what I saw there. Now, I do want to say one thing, and as you keep talking about the wheel, you know, we scored 28 to nothing and then the wheels fell off. I think a lot of that was like, look how they scored. I think it's like the wheels, like they were off for Florida Atlantic when they came into the game. Like they pushed a vehicle out there with no wheels, and then they decided to put wheels on as the game went on. Like the wheels were off. It was like we were playing against somebody who had the wheels off. That's why we got 28 to nothing. I mean, the 51-yard run starts the scoring. They, you know, he had a nice handoff, like fake handoff, and the defense went that direction. But he got through the line of scrimmage. Josh Myers blocked his guy, and he got past it. But then there was no one. I'm sorry, you shouldn't have to like. You get past the line of scrimmage, you know, maybe you get 5 yards and then you got to make somebody else miss. But he didn't have to make anybody else miss. You know, if you to go 51 yards, you should be more than just getting past the line of scrimmage. There was nobody there beyond. That was like somebody messed up and followed JK, who was supposed to stay home and guard from that from happening. So there was that. At least two, if not three, I think two of them, the next two passes were just complete blown coverages. Ben Victor's just like, you're going to just not cover Ben Victor while he's streaking down the field. I'm sorry. That's a blown coverage. And then Olave, that was the only one where there was like a defender that it wasn't a blown coverage. It's just Olave just beat his man for that, the one to make it 28 to nothing. So Florida Atlantic basically just gave Ohio State three touchdowns, complete missed assignments, absolutely blown coverages, blown read by the guy on the 51 yard run. And then they said, oh yeah, you know, maybe we should probably cover some guys. And you know, you said that's the wheels falling off of Ohio State. I think it's more like Florida Atlantic putting the wheels on.
The reason I say the wheels fell off, dude, is because of the way they started so fast. And the fact that, I don't know, maybe I'm looking for a reason to be a negative Nancy, just, you know, just Andy, just being a pessimistic, glass half empty, kind of asshole, piece of shit, jerk off motherfucker. But I don't know, man. If they play that way in other games throughout the rest of the season, and we'll see. Maybe once again, this was Ryan Day. This was the guys. Hey, you prove that you can come out here and score at will. Let's pull it back a little bit. Let's take our time. Let's just go ahead and not show the other teams that we're going to be playing in the future too much, because I don't want to tip our hand a whole lot. And let's just kind of sit back and chill. Maybe that's the attitude they took, and maybe there was a nefarious plan and reason for it. But if this is what we can expect out of Ohio State's offense, there's going to be some games they're going to get in trouble. You know, that's kind of my point. But nonetheless, hey, Chris, you know what? I'm just going to shut the fuck up because they won by 24 points. It was a good, solid win. A nice victory for Ryan Day to start out his official head coaching career at The Ohio State University. And I should just shut the hell up and be happy they won the football game, right? Because that's what I kept telling people last year when they were escaping with, you know, crappy wins in Nebraska and Indiana, yeah, and Minnesota, Maryland, and triple overtime against Maryland by a point. You know, just win, baby, just win. And now here I am dogging out Ryan Day and these kids after a 24-point win. So I'll just shut up, be happy, and let it be. You know what I mean?
I hear you, brother. I think that we're good. Next week will be a nice challenge. Luke Fickell comes to town. A hungry Cincinnati team. He's got that team playing well. The defense, you know, if we thought that defense we just played was pretty good after that first quarter, this one's going to be a lot better. This is going to be a stout defensive team and be a good test for them. And it's one, you know, Ohio State should win, but I expect Cincinnati to not fall behind 28 to nothing. I expect Cincinnati to not look like a disaster the first 8 minutes of the game and to be close going into the second half, and then maybe the Ohio State, their depth, their superior talent pulls away in the second half. You know, it's a 7-point, 10-point game at half, and then they pull away, end up winning by, you know, 17, 20 points or something. Yeah, so that's where I'm at with it. I expect a tougher test. I expect we learn more. But you would think Ohio State will grow from each week to week. You know, a lot of teams look bad their first week. And I would not say Ohio State looked bad.
This is true.
They just didn't look as amazing as, you know, we might have hoped that they would. So normal growth from week one to week two, especially with a young team, it'll be a good challenge, a good step up to see how they do against Cincinnati. Give the coaches something to look at too. Okay, we had a theory of what this might look like. We had a theory this might work. We had a theory this player used in this situation might have this effect. Now they got to see it. Now they got some film, and they can make adjustments from there. And also they have some film on Cincinnati. You know, with Florida Atlantic, they said Florida Atlantic came out and was doing stuff that they had not seen before. When they looked at the film, a lot of the stuff was like, okay, they never showed this. So yeah, it's kind of the same thing. You know, as the season gets further in, things become a little more predictable. At least that's the theory.
Let me tell you what, if everything went, or should I say, if everything goes according to how they just played Saturday, and they do that same thing against Cincinnati, they can still escape with a win. There's no way that they're jumping out to a 28-0 lead on Cincinnati like they did against Florida Atlantic. That is just not going to happen. Cincinnati returns a lot of guys from last year's roster. They were a really good football team last year. They got a nice, solid 10-point win at home to open up their season over UCLA. Now, we'll see how good UCLA turns out to be. Kind of like what you were just saying with Ohio State and Florida Atlantic. You know, hindsight's 20/20. You know, UCLA could be a 2 or 3 win team, and that 10-point win at home could have meant absolutely nothing. But at least it gave them some confidence, I'll bet, to beat a Pac-12 Power 5 conference school when you yourself are not in a Power 5 conference. And it's going to be interesting to see exactly how fired up is Cincinnati being led their third season now by Luke Fickell, who, of course, if anybody knows what it means to not only coach and win football games, even as a head coach, not just an assistant at Ohio State, but to be a player on that field playing in front of a little over 100,000 people, it's Luke Fickell. So this is going to be a charged up, motivated Cincinnati team. Luke Fickell is going to have them flying high. Dude, you're out of your friggin' mind if you think that Ohio State can beat this Cincinnati team by 17 or 20 points. Do you really believe that? Because I don't see a chance in hell that Ohio State can beat Cincinnati by that big of a margin. Especially when they just beat Florida Atlantic by 24. And I think Cincinnati is a way better football team than Florida Atlantic. I think Ohio State gets away with about a touchdown win.
Well, Cincinnati last year, 11-2 team, and you talk about Power 5 wins. They beat UCLA last year as well on the road. They went out to They went out to La La Land, and they beat Virginia Tech in the bowl game. So 11-2 team, a couple Power 5 wins last year, returns a whole bunch of people. Power 5 wins so far this year. This could be a real close one for sure. I mean, at some point, Ohio State's actually going to lose to an in-state opponent, and I'm not calling for it to be this weekend because I still think the talent edge is just too much for Cincinnati to overcome. Ohio State's got one of the most talented teams, you know, in the country right now. I mean, there's very few teams that can boast the number of 4 and 5 stars that they can. But
from a talent level, Ohio State certainly has more talented individual athletes than Cincinnati does. But I'm not taking anything away from the guys that Cincinnati does have that's playing for them right now. And the whole motivation factor is where it lies with me. And especially if Cincinnati can come out early and smack Ohio State in the mouth, which I think is very possible given what we saw against Florida Atlantic. And I realize Ohio State came out and smacked Florida Atlantic in the mouth and pushed them around very early in the game. But then once again, cooled off big time. And if Cincinnati comes out and smacks Ohio State in the mouth, how's Ohio State going to respond? Because if they can't get a hot start, are they going to be able to get motivated and ramp things up as the game goes along? Could be very interesting to see if something like that happens.
Well, I mean, the other side of that, too, is if they don't come out 20-0, maybe they keep that eye on the tiger the whole time. They keep the intensity. They keep the focus. And maybe they don't jump out to a 20-0 lead, but they slowly grind them down and wear them out because they're bringing their A game for frickin' 60 minutes. So, you know, I mean, we'll see. I've got it 34-17. I think the nice 17-point victory. I have not seen the line yet. I'm guessing that's probably about where it is, but that's how I see it. I think Ohio State doesn't quite get as many points this week, but they also, they don't give up quite as many either. So it's going to be a little bit lower scoring of an affair. I won't say a comfortable victory, but you know, not a squeaker either.
Yep. I'm calling for a 7-point win. I'm not sure I'm going to give an actual score or not. I don't feel comfortable in giving a score just yet, but I'm going to say Ohio State wins, but it's going to look dirty. It's going to look filthy. It might even look a little foul and fucked up. But ultimately, the Buckeyes do walk out of the shoe with a win over former player and coach Luke Fickell.
Former head coach.
Former head coach as well. Well, I just said coach because he was like a coach, then a head coach, then back to a coach. So he was a coach.
He's a true Buckeye. Former captain.
Oh, dude.
If Day ends up, you know, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, leaving for the NFL, the Fick, he's going to be on that short list. I'm not saying he's going to get the job, but he's going to be on the short list. Mark my words.
Well, why not? You know, I mean, I think that if you give him an opportunity to come back, I think it would look a lot different if he was the head coach now, especially if he's down at Cincinnati for a few more years and really gets his feet wet and does a hell of a job as a head coach. I can't think of anybody else I may want to bring in other than Luke Fickell if Ryan Day leaves at some point. Yeah, for greener pastures of the NFL. Both are, you know, still pretty young guys. I mean, Fickell's a little bit older. He's like what, 46 45 46, something like that.
Yeah, there'd be some interesting names. So, you know, people would be bringing up Vrabel, Fick's buddy. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what would happen if, like, you know, 3 years from now, Day's gone. Because I, you know, he's not an Ohio guy like Fickell. He's not an Ohio guy like Meyer. He might be more of an NFL guy. We'll see. You know, and I guess we'll find out. But yeah, that's a whole another week, a whole another podcast right there. Like,
yeah, we could talk about that for about the next 3 or 4 hours probably. But I don't think we have that amount of time. So, Chris, let's go ahead. Let's shut it down. Why don't you tell everybody out there where they can kind of catch out some new stuff that you're doing? You're kind of taking a little bit of a backseat from Choice Conversations. I know there's a lot of people out there that are probably bummed to hear it, but it's for a totally good reason, something I'm actually really excited about, too. I think it's cool stuff.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so I've started doing sharing some of my music online. I've got a stage name, if you will, of Zen Large. So Z-E-N and then Large, like you would expect. Zenlarge.co, go there, or if you just go on YouTube and look for Zenlarge, it's kind of like hip hop, a little jazzy. I've got some jazz fusion rock stuff I might be doing here pretty soon. Right now, just one video up, but more is coming. Where that came from.
Awesome. Zenlarge, my boy, large and in charge. Zenlarge, rocking the microphone, brother. That's awesome stuff. Well, this edition of the Buckeye Leafcast, also brought to you by Christie's Cleaning Services, LLC. It's not clean until it's Christie Clean. Be sure to visit her Facebook page at Christie's Cleaning Services, LLC. Also brought to you by Columbus Wired for your premier source for sports in and around the Central Ohio area. Come check us out at columbuswired.net. So, Chris, Cincinnati, I've got them by 7. You've got them by a bunch. I think we got to put a 6-pack of beer on this one.
And what would be the conditions for winning?
Well, you buy me a 6-pack of beer. I buy you a 6-pack of beer.
If they win by 17, I win. If they win by 7, you win.
Yeah.
So whoever's closest, is that what you want to say? Like if it's I guess at 12 points, if they win by 12 or less, that would be you. If they win by 13 or more, that would be me. Looks like that's the middle point, if my math is correct.
Okay. All right. We'll put our own little line on it. All right. Yeah. The line right now is 12.5.
Right.
12.
You're taking the under?
I got the under. You got the over.
All right. Sounds good.
Fucking A. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. You've heard it live and in color. Or, well, at least recorded and then post-produced. The Intergalactic Buckeye fan and myself, we thank you for downloading another edition of the show. Everybody take care. Until we talk to you next time, Chris, leave them like we always do. OH.
I-O.
Go Bucks!